Good morning. Again, I appreciate this opportunity to share this formative work with you. Thank you all for hanging around to the end. Let me see. Arrow down here. Okay. Let me just say, I don't know if any of my co-presenters or the colleagues or a member of the team are in here, but if you are, I certainly want to recognize this was a collaborative effort, as you see all in my list here. I want to say that there is no commercial interest in terms of this work. It was funded through CDC, and these are some other folks that want to recognize as being a part of the team and contributing to this work, and certainly the focus group participants as well. So what is the issue? This focus was particularly limited to women of childbearing age, because in terms of public health issue, is the women that women who smoke during pregnancy is the issue. And there's a growing body of evidence that to support all the adverse outcomes that for the woman, for the pregnancy itself, as well as for the infant. And so this is the issue that was of concern to CDC and why they funded this. So the simple thing would be to get everyone to quit smoking during pregnancy, but convincing women to do that is not easy. So the question is whether or not graphic warning labels would be an effective strategy with this particular subpopulation of smokers. And also, this research was timely in the sense that our U.S. Food and Drug Administration was preparing to implement graphic warning labels. We had in place text warning labels that had been in place since 1965, and part of that, one of those did have messages about the effects on the infant, but wanting to explore this issue a little more with this particular group. So wanting to look at the knowledge and attitudes and beliefs that women of childbearing age had about smoking during pregnancy in general, and specifically their awareness of its association with birth defects. And to get specifically, we wanted to get their opinion and reaction to two graphic warning labels. And also to hear what they had to say in terms of what kind of information would reach women who smoke during pregnancy. So we conducted 12 focus groups with four segments. We want to look at women who plan their pregnancy, which is not nearly half of the pregnancies are not planned. So we looked at women who were first-time pregnancy, that were planning a pregnancy within the next year, those who had a pregnancy within the past year but were also planning within the past 2 years but also planning a pregnancy within the next year. And then the next two groups were those women who had been pregnant within the last 24 months, in the last 2 years, and that quit smoking, which was the third group, and then those that smoked throughout the pregnancy. And we did ask women for information on their socioeconomic status, for their education, for their self-reported household income, as well as whether or not they had insurance. And of course, we know with SES data how very tricky that is. So, but just to give us an idea, in terms of being eligible, the women need to be 18 to 30, proficient in English, so we didn't have other groups represented, and then not pregnant at the time of the study, at least not the time that we did the assessment for the focus groups. So we used a professional firm to recruit because we knew it would be difficult to recruit women, particularly those in group four that smoke during pregnancy. So we ended up having groups in four cities. We wanted to have in West Virginia because that city had the highest smoking prevalence rate, but again, that one of the challenges was that you have to have a facility there, a recruiting facility, because it was difficult enough with a recruiting firm, and let alone if we didn't have one. So that fell through, and we weren't able to the firm that was there said that they just could not recruit these folks for us, so that we had to go with Chattanooga instead. And so we did compensate the ladies for participating. We followed a structure, we had an interview guide, and with questions, and these were just three of the areas that we're reporting on here, but there were other domains of interest that we did explore. And then when at the end of the focus group, the women did a questionnaire, anonymous questionnaire, to ask about some other things in terms of characteristics of the women. We used in vivo to code and analyze the data. Now, these are the two warning labels that we use. The one on the left is a premature baby, and this is a label from Australia. So this is a real one. And then you can see on the right, this is one that was a medical illustration that we came up with because we wanted to have cleft lip and palate be one of the labels. And you can see the differences, even though the illustration, we try to do some similarities between the real one, but that'll give you an idea of those two labels. So in terms of our participants, we had 79 women that participated in the four focus group. The mean age was about 26, and we had the majority of participants were white, even though we did have some Hispanics that participate as well. More than a third had a high school diploma less. And as you can see, there was those that had college graduates was 16-17%. But there were quite a few who had some college. So they either had a two-year degree or they had not completed their degree. So, and we used for income, this was self-reported income again, the cutoff for WIC, since that tends to be related to pregnancy and caring for women when they're had their babies. So overall, all the respondents were aware of that smoking during pregnancy could harm the fetus, and most of them specifically mentioned low birth weight and premature birth. We polled the women around the table as we were doing each of the focus group, and there were only seven that even had heard or thought that there was a relationship to cleft lip and palate. So most were aware of specific birth defects. The common attitude among the women was that, certainly smoking during pregnancy is not acceptable, and they talked about all the issues and being put down and looked down upon when they do. And since the majority of pregnancies were not planned, they said absolutely once you learned about the pregnancy, you should quit. And of course, that depend on, they said, your how strong your addiction is. But they are motivated. But that was an issue that many of the women talked about. Okay, so in terms of their risk, several important beliefs about risk of smoking across all of the groups, the women, and this is also consistent with other literature, is that risk to the baby is more important. It's more important to emphasize risk to the baby than to emphasize risk to the woman. Also, women thought that risk was greater during the first trimester. Most of the women did because the baby is developing, and so if they couldn't quit for the entire time, they thought if they didn't quit up front, of course, after they found out, which could be late into the first trimester, then that would minimize the risk. But the other thing that was interesting find was that most of the respondents said that if they couldn't quit, because it was quitting cold turkey proposed some risk to the baby. And in fact, many of the women said that their provider actually encouraged them just to cut back on how much they smoke rather than going cold turkey and quitting. So that was interesting. For some, smoking during pregnancy, their personal experience weighted more than the facts. So if they had an adverse outcome who never smoked, that kind of negated what the facts for them. Or if they smoked, or a family member of someone they knew smoked and experienced no negative outcome from that, then again, that for them, for those who didn't want to accept the facts, that supported what they wanted to believe, I suppose, anyway. So we also asked the women specifically about birth defects, which ones would influence their decision to motivate them to quit. SIDS and stillbirths were the ones that women said would be most likely to motivate them. And the reason that they gave was because that was the risk of losing the child. You know, with stillbirth, you've carried this child to term, and then to have to lose the child and still have to go through the birthing process, that was, for the stillbirth, that was a major issue, emotional issue for the women. And so the idea of getting excited, and women had heard of SIDS, but they didn't know necessarily that was related to smoking. But again, to have a perfectly healthy baby, they said, and to bring that baby home and then to lose it because you had smoked and that it could be associated with smoking was very emotional and very traumatic, and women could relate to that. Cleft lip and palate, which is, again, the medical illustration that we came up with, there was a mixed reaction to that label. For some women, they said that it was disturbing because the child would be marred and scarred for life, and so that resonated with them. Other women said, I mean, it's fixable, it's no big deal, you know, so that wouldn't motivate them at all. So that was, we had mixed reactions to the cleft lip and palate label. Overall, like with most pictorial warning labels, the women reacted. When we gave them these, we had the labels turned down, and so we asked everybody to flip them at the same time and asked to see what their initial impression and reaction. And many of the women, when they would flip it, they'd flip it back over because they didn't want to look at it and didn't want to see it. And particularly women who had had a premature birth, or they knew someone who had a child with cleft lip and palate. So, you know, there were a bunch of emotions that they talked about of being sad, that these pictures were very disturbing to them. But there were a small group of women who were angry about, they saw it as being exploitive, and the fact that anyone would consider putting these kind of pictures on a label. They were very upset about that, and this quote says here, you know, don't go to scare tactics, just educate us. And so that was a concern with a small group of women. Okay. Then we asked, after we had shown both labels and Gambier initial impressions, and they talked about the labels, what they liked and disliked, we asked them to, out of the two, which one they thought was most effective, and so they thought that this one was out of the two. But again, you're comparing a reel with a medical illustration, but they thought that they liked this one because they said it showed the picture, it had enough information, that it was very realistic and believable. But then there were just a few who said, how would anyone seeing this know that this was could be attributed to smoking? Premature baby, a baby could be premature for many reasons. So they questioned the authenticity of this. And again, cleft lip and palate was less persuasive for all some of the reasons that I mentioned in some of the quotes here. Again, women didn't think the picture, they said it needed to be a real picture. They didn't think this medical illustration would be very effective. And the other thing, the problem was that women just were not aware of cleft lip and palate. Interesting, a few people said their only awareness of cleft lip and palate was those commercials that come on TV in third world countries where they're trying to get you to send money to help women who and help children who have cleft lip and palate to get it corrected. So then we asked them whether or not these labels or a label that had a birth defect would be effective in motivating women to quit smoking. And the Australian, you know, while they were pregnant or before they were pregnant, and most of the women said it would motivate them to quit if they were pregnant. And the Australian label was particularly effective in that because of the image, because of the supporting text, that was there, and also it gave some information about risk. Few of the women believe that it really could motivate women to quit before they became pregnant. And one lady, it was just so interesting. She says, well, why would you quit if you don't even know if you're going to get pregnant? So, but the main thing was that the women felt that if it motivated women to quit, but if only if, and this was particularly in group four, the women who smoked during their pregnancy who had very strong addictions, their perspective, the women in group four, was that it would only motivate them if it was the first pregnancy. But overall, all the groups felt that it would motivate women to quit if they were pregnant, but not in the preconception period. And the other interesting find was that women who often do not get support from their partners to quit while they're pregnant felt that if with the warning labels that that would help them support them for the partners and for their family members and everyone else who don't support them, who smoke around them, to know about these issues. And so that was an interesting find as well. So what we asked them, what would be effective in terms of the labeling? They thought it should be certainly appeal to low literacy, be easy to understand, but also communicating, it would help communicate this information would get out there early, but even in the preconception period, even though they didn't think that it would be effective for most women. Also use real pictures, because they, again, as this section said, a picture's worth a thousand words. Focus on the risk and negative health effects of the baby. Again, there were some differences. High SES group people, highly educated people, always wanted to say, well, we need statistics and whatever, so how we would communicate risk, but they definitely thought that there should be an effort to communicate risk. And so whether to include statistics and how that will be. But some of the other groups, particularly lower SES groups, said having testimonials from people who had who were credible messengers, and these were women who had gone through and maybe had a baby with low, with an adverse outcome. So, other words, to better educate about the specific birth defects, like cleft lip and palate, and also the long-term consequences of and susceptibility, as well as the severity of the birth defects. Timing of cessation, again, for women in group four, they emphasize the stress. They emphasize how difficult it is when you're really, the addiction is very strong, and so to try and quit at the time when you're pregnant was just very, very difficult. So the challenge is to practice preconception health behaviors if they're not planning to a pregnancy. And of course, working with healthcare providers, particularly OBGYNs, because the messages that the women are receiving is that it's okay to, you know, just to cut down and not quit. So some of the issues is, of course, this is qualitative work, so we don't necessarily have representativeness, and we certainly had more women with the higher SES in our group. But hopefully this information will help inform some of the policy work that's being done now, in the sense that it's the need to use real images and also to emphasize risk, particularly for maybe stillborn and stillbirths and SIDS, because those two resonated with those women. Okay. Back.